Our speaker this morning is a distinguished alumnus of the school, received both his bachelor's and master's degree here and his doctorate degree from the University of California in Berkeley. Like many students at this institution, he earned his way through school, in his gay case, beginning in the grade schools, earning it there and in high school and undergraduate college and on to his doctorate degree. When he graduated from the University of California, his major professor had this to say to him: "Hunter, I won't let you throw away your career on some little Mormon seminary in Utah. You have the makings of one of America's great historians. I haven't spent these past years in order for you to expend this training fruitlessly. If you will change your mind, and instead of going to some Mormon seminary, we will secure for you a proper place in a great university where expectations and the training you have received may be realized." Well, on returning to obscurity, Brother Hunter began at once the continuous task of devoting scholarly effort to illuminating the pages of Mormon history. He's the author of Brigham Young, the Colonizer, The Mormons and the American Frontier, Utah in Her Western Setting, Beneath Ben Lomond's Peak, and many articles in the American Historical Review and the Pacific Historic Review. We are honored in having him to speak to us today because we know he always has something worthwhile to give us. President Milton R. Hunter.
President Wilkinson, faculty members, and students of this great university, I'm happy to be here today and feel honored to have the privilege of saying a few words. The president has pointed out that this is my school. I love the Brigham University, of course, more than any other school in the world. Although I got my PhD from the University of California, I claim the BYU, as you folks no doubt will always claim the BYU. To me, this is the great school. I'm always happy to come back here. Every opportunity that I have, I am pleased to take advantage of it. As most of you possibly know, I've just completed a very interesting and extensive tour, our trip down through Central America, Mexico, visiting some 30-odd archaeological sites and museums, making quite a complete coverage of Mexico and Guatemala over into Honduras. And so today I'd like to say a few words on some of the interesting things that we did on that trip. Now, of course, with the short time that we have here, I'll only have time to point out just a few of the highlights. But we had a very successful and interesting time. We took a complete coverage of moving pictures for the church, and I came home with over 2,000 stills to be projected, which I took. So I suppose we have the most complete set of pictures in the world of those archaeological sites. The pictures will be released for use in the church, so some time in the future, possibly 9 months or so, you can see them down here at the BYU when we get them edited and sound attached to them and so forth. I might point out how this trip came about. A year ago, Sister Hunter and I had the privilege of touring the Mexican mission, and while there we visited some of the prominent archaeological sites, went down to Oaxaca and visited Monte Alban and Mitla, visited Teotihuacan, went off to Yucatan, and visited Chichen Itza, Uxmal, and Kabah. And I got a few new Book of Mormon evidences. The Improvement Era heard about it, and they came over and asked me to write some articles. I told him I would. But some of my pictures didn't turn out so well. So I wanted to get some better pictures, and I wrote back down to some of my friends in Mexico. They promised to go to the sites and take some of those particular things again. They didn't do it. Nearly a year passed by, so I was out to conference with Brother Paul C. Child of the Welfare. He works for the American Express. And I mentioned to him how badly I needed some of those pictures. Well, he said, why don't you go down there and get them? Well, I said, I have no way. I go to conference every Sunday. He said, you have Christmas holidays. Why don't you take a tour down there? So he outlined a tour. I said, well, I work for the First Presidency. I'll have to see what they say. I went to the First Presidency, and they gave me their blessings and said, go. Go do the job and take the pictures and so forth. It's a good idea. So as quickly as my conference was over, I'd invited 20 people to go with me. But when I made the itinerary, I found that there are a few spots which I was intensely interested in that I wouldn't have a chance to see, such as Bonampak, where the dark and white people are painted on the walls. Since that was discovered in 1946, I've been very anxious to see it, but thought I never would get a chance. And then, of course, Palenque, where the Egyptian-type burial is, where there's crosses and so forth, showing worshippers of the white god. So I went to the First Presidency and said that these things are off the regular route. I'd like to see them. They said you should see them and bring back what's there. So extend your trip when the crowd comes home. So they told me to take Jose Davila, a Mexican, a wonderful guide, a branch president down there, and head for the jungles after the group came home. So I told my wife I was going to stay another week. And I headed for Guatemala first with the group and then back to Mexico. And then I found Otto Dohm down there working for the church, an excellent photographer. And the idea got in my mind the church should have moving pictures as well as the stills. So I wrote and phoned the First Presidency, and they said, why, by all means, that's what should happen. Stay as long as you want and complete the job before you come back. So every time I wrote to my wife, I told her I was going to stay another week and another week. And finally, people began to ask when I was coming home, and she didn't know. She thought maybe I'd gone for good. Well, finally, after 6 weeks, why, she wrote me a letter and said, there's an archaeological ruin in our backyard that you haven't seen. You better come home and see it. So I came home. Now, with this first group of people, they were fine Latter-day Saints that I'd picked specially and invited. So we had a trip that I can't explain how interesting and enjoyable. I merely want to point out one event with this particular group. We went, as I said, directly to Guatemala City from Los Angeles by plane. And then we had outlined to go up to Chichicastenango. I've been interested in the Indians, the Quiche Maya Indians, for many years, because I have felt that they were the most pure descendants of the Nephites and Lamanites that we have in America. I've heard that they hadn't intermarried with other peoples. As Orientals came in, they had kept their blood quite pure. And I had written that up, but Tom and I had in our book, and I wanted to go see if we told the truth. So I outlined that we'd go up to Chichicastenango. And fortunately, we struck there on a wonderful religious celebration that they were having. The greatest that they have, St. Thomas Day. They had about a week of celebration. So for about 2 days, we were there seeing one of the most colorful things I've ever seen in my life. I can't explain how colorful. Those people dress, well, there's 20 tribes of Mayans, different groups, and they all have their own particular dress, and they dress more colorful than any people I've ever seen. And of course, being at that festival, they were all present of the various tribes. I mean representations from the various tribes. Some possibly 5,000 people were there. So we had a very interesting time watching him worship of a mixed Catholicism and their old Mayan religion, and possibly dating way back to Hebrew days, burning incense on the steps of the church and swinging incense burners back and forth this way. Now, all day I went around taking Hebrew profiles and Hebrew noses and tagging this man and that man and this lady and that man around, because that was my interest. We had a medical doctor from Idaho Falls, and his interest, of course, was medicine, and he saw a number of these ladies had some girders, and so he went around feeling those girders and wanting to operate. And then we had a dentist, and he saw that some of them needed a little dental work, and he was anxious to get out of them on that respect. And then we had a lawyer, and of course we claimed that he wanted to get some kind of a lawsuit out of them, but he wouldn't admit that. Well, that day was one I'll never forget. Now, I think I better spend the time on the trip after the group left for Salt Lake on the 6th of January. Otto Dawn, as I pointed out, Jose Davion and I, headed for the jungles where people very seldom go, where primarily the archaeologists have been. We first went over to Tenosique in the southwest corner of Mexico to see the stone on which is carved the Tree of Life, Lehi's Dream, there at Izapa, 5 miles from Tenosique. Now, you recall a year ago, Dr. Jakeman of the Brigham Young University here, of your school, wrote up a very excellent account of Lehi's Dream and this Stone of Life. Well, that afternoon, the next morning, we took pictures of that stone, prepared to get it covered up, our shelter put over it, visited the other mounds and stelas and so forth at this particular site, Izapa. In fact, it's been a great city at one time, possibly in the early Mayan days, shortly after Book of Mormon times, in the days when they had still had a pretty good knowledge of Nephite religion and history. From there, we flew directly to Guatemala City, spent a day in the museum and also in one of the earliest of the archaeological sites, dating back at least to the time of Christ. There we saw some cement, no doubt better than we make at the present time. The Book of Mormon claims that Nephites were experts in cement making, and jewels and various things which have been dug out of some of the tombs, which date back to the time when Nephites were at the height of their civilization. And then we hired a small plane. We took with us one of the elders, Toby Pingree, a friend of my son's, and the four of us and the pilot really headed for the jungles in that plane. We flew first over to Copan in Honduras, and that was a great cultural center of the Mayans at one time. We got some beautiful pictures there of those many, many stelas and buildings which are there. And the clouds favored us with a beautiful sky and beautiful clouds that day. And then we flew to Quirigua, and from there up to Flores. Flores isn't one of the oldest sites. In fact, it was settled after the Spaniards came. When they came to Chichen Itza in Yucatan, some of the Itzas moved clear down into northern part of Guatemala and settled on Lake Pitan on an island. It took another 100 years before the Spaniards captured them. So they had about 100 years there. There's a beautiful town on one of the islands there at the present time. And I've never seen a more colorful, a more beautiful, picturesque place in my life than Flores. As we flew in, we took pictures of the island and the town from the air and then from the hill over where the ruins are. So we have some gorgeous pictures of that particular part of the country. Through this section, it's jungles with dense vegetation. And, of course, with the water and so forth, it made a very beautiful sight. From there, we flew to Tikal and then to Washatum. Now, those two sites are two of the old Mayan sites. In fact, they found dates as early as 320 A.D. by one correlation or 60 A.D. by another. That would be either in Nephite times. Dr. Marley, one of your greatest scholars of the Mayans, says that certainly they were living in those places as early as 300 B.C. If they were, of course, that would be during the Nephite period. Now, these places, I've never seen such beautiful plaster. Somebody had dug in one of the edges of the doors, of the doorway, and the plaster was at least 8 inches thick and very white, of a very high grade. I saw plaster that we can't make its duplicate at the present time, and no doubt made by, at least if not by the Nephites, by the early followers of the Nephites. From there, we swung west over to Huehuetenango, a later Mayan site back to Guatemala City, and then we left by the regular airline over to Yucatan. We visited the places at Chichen Itza, Uxmal, Cabá, and then we went down to headed for the jungles again in the private plane for Bonampak. Now, I mentioned my interest in Bonampak. I might explain a little bit more about that. Long about 15 years ago, when it looked as if we were going to have a world's war, some young chap up in Chicago got a little bit worried about the draft, I suppose, and he decided he'd get away from this civilization and go out where he could find peace and contentment. So he went clear down in southern Mexico, out in the jungles, and he found a group of Indians out there, the Lacandon Indians. And he lived with them and married one of them, lived with them for 7 years. And then they told him about Bonampak, some 15 miles or so from where he was living. He went up and found a big building, 60 feet or so long, 3 rooms, with pictures on all the walls of dark and light people in various scenes. He went to Mexico City and reported his discovery, and of course the archaeologists became very interested. And then you and I read articles in the magazines about the discovery, and we see the pictures in the books. Now, I could with ease sit there in my office and look at the pictures and books, but that wasn't enough. I wanted to go see it. Now, this man that made the discovery about 2 years ago was taking a group of artists from Mexico City over there, and when they were crossing one of the rivers, one of the fellows wiggled the boat too much and tipped it over. This Mexican couldn't swim, and the man that made the discovery tried to save him, and of course they both went down, so he died there about 2 years ago. By the way, we took the picture of his wife and her relatives and so forth. Now, the aviator flew us clear out to the south end of Mexico in the jungles. And there's a little airstrip there that he landed on. And he said, now you're out in the wilds where there's no law, no people, only a few Lacandon Indians. Now, he said, if you get lost, why, you won't be the first one or the last one that got lost. There was an American got lost here for 15 days very recently. And with that sort of encouragement, Jose Davila says, let's get back in the plane and go back with him. But Otto Don and I said, no, we're going to Bonampak. So he says, all right, if you're going. He says, I think you're fools, but if you're going, why, there's your trail out the southwest west corner of the airstrip. So we started out the southwest corner of the airstrip. And I've never in my life known what jungles were. Trees possibly 100 to 150 feet high, vines growing through the top of the trees, little flowers like we have for houseplants, great big vines growing clear to the top of those trees. The trail with the vines about so high because the Indians that I'm going to tell you about were so short that they could just skip under these vines. And, of course, we had to do a lot of stooping. And then, of course, it's hard to tell because so many leaves which way the trail went. And then, of course, they loved to use the water for the trails. Now, at first, we picked our way across the streams of water and tried to find logs to walk on and rocks to walk on and so forth, but we soon got tired of doing that. Now, after about 1 hour, when we thought we were about lost, the Lord took pity on us and sent us some Indians. We met a couple ladies and a boy, and these Indians are little folks about 4 feet high, just about like this. The men and the women all look alike. They all have long black hair, parted in the middle. They've never had a comb. They never combed their hair, I guess, only pushing it down on the sides. They have one dress, and it's made out of canvas that we make our tents out of. It's loose and hangs down between their knees and their ankles. Well, of course, when I said they all looked alike, some of my friends asked how we could tell them apart, and I told them, well, all those that looked like they're going to have babies were the women. Because the men didn't have any beards, and it was mighty hard to tell them apart. The men were a little bit taller. Now, these Indians first announced to us that they were the wives of an Indian that had just got killed by one of the other Indians. And that didn't sound very enticing to us, to know Indians did that to each other down there. Nevertheless, we were thankful to have them with us. They guided us to their home. And we entered into a very beautiful little spot. They had cleared off about 10 acres, planted it with bananas, and sweet potatoes of various kinds and gourds. They had 12 dogs and goats, chickens and turkeys and ducks. And then a couple parrots sitting in the tree as decoys to bring in other parrots so they could have parrot dinner every time they wanted. So they had quite a little paradise. No taxes to pay and no colleges to go to and no examinations. It would be a wonderful paradise to live in. Of course, they had some disadvantages. We took their pictures and showed it to them with one of these minute cameras. And each person said, "Who's this?" about themselves. They'd never seen their own likeness before. The jungles are so thick, it was practically dark down along the trail. And, of course, I mentioned something about the trail. Sometimes four or five logs had fallen on top of each other, so we'd climb this high over the top, or if there's a little hole underneath, they had been in the habit of crawling underneath. So we had to crawl underneath. And I had a big camera in front, big movie camera, and another hanging down my back, and some water jugs on the side. I was pretty well loaded down, and the others loaded the same way. So, of course, with the heat intense, we had quite a time along the trail. Seemed as if every vine reached up and took hold of my foot and tripped me over. In fact, the first nice fall I had was after the Indians had joined us. We were walking on a log across the stream of water. Had a lot of nice green moss on, and my feet left me just as I got in the middle of the log, and I lit on my seat in the middle of the stream. I held both cameras up while I struggled out of the water, and you should have heard those Indian ladies laugh. They thought that was the most fun they'd ever had. Now, after a while, we found that the trail sometimes went in the water as deep as our knees for 100 yards at a time. When we got to the Indian camp, the two men were out hunting. There were 6 or 8 or 10 women. They were polygamists and 2 men. So we had to wait for an hour and a half for the men. Then they decided they'd take us to Bonampak. We started up the trail, got nearly to the home of the man that did the killing. Obagon, his name was. And so the Indian said, "We're going back. When you get up to Obagon's house, it's just a little ways away, he'll take you up to Bonampak." And we didn't want Obagon to take us, so we said, "Nothing doing. We've hired you." And they said, "Well, he'll want to go. And we don't want to be up by him." Well, we said we won't let him go. Sure enough, when we came to Obagon's house, well, we gave him a box of bullets to keep him with us. We kept our presence to give him one at a time when they looked a little discouraged. And we got to Obagon's house, and he was a bombastic sort of fellow, and he jumped up and ran and threw his arms around me and began to love me. And, of course, I remembered he'd just killed a man. It wasn't so pleasing to have him love me. And he wanted to know where we're going. We said, "Bonampak." He says, "I'll go with you." We said, "No, you won't. You can't go." And he said, "Why not?" And we said, "We've got these Indians to go with us." He said, "I'll go too." And we said, "No, you won't. We don't want you." And so we argued for quite a little while. Then he said, "Well, when you come back, come and write in my big book." He wanted some presents, and of course, we didn't give him any, and he thought he'd get a chance on the way back. So we went on to Bonampak. About an hour before we got to Bonampak, dark came on. We put our hammocks up in the trees. We hadn't brought any bedding along, and I mentioned how intensely hot it had been all day, and after we got in the hammocks for a little while, we were lying there shivering. The breezes came, and it was really cold. It was really chilly. The Indians built a little teeny fire, which they lay by, and I wanted to get out and join them, but I lay there all night in the hammock. Now, our food supply, we bought just a dozen eggs, had them boiled, and a few little cans with little sausages in. And the first day we ate heartily, and the Indians didn't bring any food along, so when night came, we'd almost taken care of our food. The next day we decided we could have 2 little wieners each, or 2 little sausages each. And that was our allotment for the next day. Well, the next day we had none until we got back to the Indian camp. Well, we finally arrived at Bonampak, took the pictures, and then hiked back to the Indian camp, got there at 3:30 in the afternoon the next day. Now, they say it was only 30 miles. I believe they left one cipher off. We stayed at the Indian camp that night. They had a little open air house shed that we hung our hammocks up in. And about 10 o'clock, Jose Davila got up and built a great big fire between Otto Doan's hammock and mine and one on the outside of his. And then we got a little sleep while the fire was on. Then about 3, I got up and really built a big fire. In fact, I about roasted them out for the next hour. And then I got back in bed and had a couple hours sleep. Now, we went back down to the airstrip the next morning, supposed to be there at 10 o'clock. We got there at 9:30. And the aviator didn't come till 2 p.m. because he knew we wouldn't be back. In fact, he thought we probably would never get back. 8 of the Indians went down with us. The 2 men, 2 boys, and 4 women. And while they were entertaining themselves, waiting for the airplane to come, this is a story that you might not believe, but I've got pictures that I can prove it. They all sat down and began to work on each other. And I said, Otto, look, those Indians are actually digging the lice off each other's heads and eating them. Oh, he said, no, they wouldn't do that. I said, you come over and see. And sure enough, they'd pick one out, put it between their front teeth and bite it, and then go after another. Now, the day before, when we arrived at their camp, we hadn't had any food in all day. And, of course, I hadn't seen them do this, or else I probably wouldn't have done what I did the day before. But we told them to bring us some food. And so one of the women brought out 3 eggs, and we said, cooked or raw? She said, raw. So we said, go back and cook them. So she went back and cooked them and brought with the 3 eggs some tortillas. And I looked at those little dirty Indians and then looked at the tortillas, and I said, no, I wouldn't care for any. And then I felt what my stomach was saying. I said, I think I'll take one. I took one, and it was the most delicious tortilla and the most delicious food I ever tasted. I said, I'll take 2. So I took another, and then they chopped down a banana tree for us, and we received their hospitality with bananas for dessert. I'm glad that we got the food before the next day, before I saw this other event. The plane arrived at 2 o'clock. And our next stop was Palenque. Now that's a spot that I'd like to have all of you see, and most of you can see it someday. By the way, I wouldn't advise all of you to go to Bonampak, because that was a really hard hike. But I'm happy we went. But Palenque can be reached by airplane going to Villa Hermosa on the regular airline, then on the bus over to the railroad, and then on the railroad over to Palenque. Palenque was built in the early Mayan period. In fact, they've got a date there of around 700 or so A.D. About 2 years ago, Dr. Ruse discovered an Egyptian-type burial. The BYU faculty, Dr. Christensen, brought him up to Salt Lake to lecture, and he lectured down here last year. Well, I liked his lecture until I got to his conclusion. He told us all about that it's like the Egyptian burials and so forth, but your archaeologists decided a long time ago that the American pyramids were built for outside worship, not for burials. And so Dr. Ruse finally concluded that although this is like the Egyptian burials, it has no relationship to them, and there's no Egyptian influence. Now, he didn't want to be out of harmony with the other archaeologists, so I was disgusted at his conclusions. Of course, I saw him in Merida and told him how much I enjoyed his talk. Didn't tell him how disgusted I was at his conclusions, because I wanted to take pictures of all that he had there in the museum. And, of course, I got access to one thing that he's made. He's fixed up the corpse with all of the jewelry on it, ready to publish an article on it, and I got a picture of that, and was cautioned not to use it, only to project until after he wrote his article. And then I went to take a moving picture, and he had a reversal of feelings by then and wouldn't let us take the moving picture. Well, at Palenque, there's a lot of wonderful things that furnish nice evidence for the Book of Mormon. 3 crosses with the Quetzal bird sitting on the top, with a large Mayan and a small Mayan, one at the head of the bird and one at the tail, offering sacrifices. This Quetzal bird connotes that they were worshippers of the white god, the white-bearded god that visited ancient America. And Mormons know that they were worshippers of Christ, that he was the white-bearded god. They have a tower there, which was very interesting. We read in the Book of Mormon about King Benjamin's tower, that he went up on top and preached. They have a tower that we call King Benjamin's Tower because it was built, it looks as if, for that purpose. It has about 4 stories, and it's just a tower with a winding stair. You get to the top, And then there's a little alder, somewhat of an alder, in the center of the top, and an open place to look out over the country in each direction. So we enjoyed Palenque very, very much. It's a very picturesque setting, right to the edge of some beautiful mountains with heavy tropic vegetation. In fact, here's another story that sounds impossible to believe. I'll take time to tell. I wrote to my wife and said, "Sister Hunter," well, of course, I wasn't that formal. I said, "There's actually leaves down here on some of these plants 3 feet long." Now, I saw them off a half a block away, and I didn't measure them, but I took a guess, and then after I wrote the letter, I thought, I wonder if I exaggerated. That sounds like quite a bit. Well, the same kind of plants were over at Palenque. I had a tape with me, so I thought I'd measure them. And some of those leaves measured from 75 to 85 inches in length and 50 to 55 inches in width. Now, if you want to know how large that is, that's just the size of a big double bed that you and I sleep on. Now, there'd be about a dozen of those leaves come out on stems possibly 6 inches around and about 2 or 3 feet high, and then that big leaf out on top of that, like about 12 big beds spreading out there. Now, I can tell that story with authority because I had a tape with me. Now, I think I've used about all the time. I'd like to bear my testimony on the Book of Mormon. We gathered a lot of some new evidences, and I can more intelligently interpret these ancient ruins now than I could before because I've seen them. I would like to suggest that we all read the Book of Mormon and do so with a prayerful heart and ask God if it's true. And I know, as Moroni says, that he will reveal to you it's true. He's revealed that to me time and time again. I know it's true as I know that I'm alive. It contains the gospel of Jesus Christ. It contains some of the greatest doctrine, teachings, truths that you can find. So let's all read the Book of Mormon and live by its teachings. I humbly pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.